Okay, we're talking about booting stuff from things that live on the network somewhere as opposed to local things. Usually achieved by having a little piece of ROM on your network card, which basically configures the card and sends it off to a broadcast address to go and get some further piece of software, which would then in turn load your actual kernel and your, which would then boot and then load your actual operating system. These days, hardly anyone actually has a network card anymore. It's all on the motherboard, so obviously the boot ROM has moved into the PC's BIOS. There are tricks by which you can disassemble your BIOS and change parts of it and do interesting things. There's a very nice project called GPXE, which does all kinds of funky stuff that normal PXE doesn't do, like, for example, booting off ATA over Ethernet, or booting off web servers, or booting off iSCSI, or any of these fancy toys. Anything that's not a PC will most likely have some kind of boot thingy somewhere in its firmware. Sun Open Boot has got its thing, the Alphas have got their thing. I'm pretty certain that Mac Power PCs have their thing. And if all else fails, you can netboot off a CD-ROM. You can basically chain load a network bootloader from a media bootloader. Works quite well. Stop me if there are questions. Standards-wise, it all started with Novell, who made a truly atrocious thing. I've got two boxes that run that crap, and it's just a pain in the butt. Fortunately, the way it works is it expects the server to have some given file. So all you do is you load your PXE bootloader, you give it that file name, and then the Novell thing downloads the PXE thing, which you can then use to do something useful. Old Alphas and Vaxen have a thing called MOPD, Maintenance Operational Procedures Daemon, which they used to network boot. Practically any DEC machine would have had that stuff on it, and it was quite useful because you could actually stop the operating system. You could go in with MOPD onto the bare hardware with it, and then restart the operating system where you left off, which was pretty cool. The next great standard to come along was BootP, and lots of things use that to this day. An example would be printers. A lot of the Hewlett-Packard stuff uses BootP. DHCP is like a superset of BootP. If you've got a modern DHCP server and you wanted to talk BootP, you basically just tell it to like ignore all of these functions, and then it will talk to BootP clients, no problem. And the latest of all these things is called PXE, which is an open standard mostly developed by Intel. But there were some other people involved. I think it might have been Hewlett-Packard or somebody. And there's an open version called GPXE, which is seriously cool. Got this. Bah! To actually set up a NetBoot environment, which I've done at home for just about anything that comes into the house, you need all of those things. DNS mask is kind of optional. ROPD is a reverse ARP for Sun machines, which have a nasty habit of ignoring everything else. They go to a ROP server and they ask, I've got this hardware address, give me an IP address. It gives it an IP address, and then it would go directly to the TFTP daemon and go and download its kernel from there. Practically any other form of machine is going to use DHCPD. I'll show you some config examples of how that all works a bit later. You need a TFTP daemon to just actually transfer the bootloaders, kernels, etc. around the place. PXE Linux is a kind of bootloader which you can issue out by TFTP, which will then load bigger, fancier things. TFTP is quite limited in terms of what it will actually do for you. You can't really pass kernel parameters over it. You can't do files over certain sizes depending on what TFTP server you've got. PXE Linux is small enough to download by TFTP, and then you can do all sorts of stuff with it. And the other new kid on the block is Grub, which has a network bootloader stage one, which you can also use. Okay, that's basically the story now for the other bits. Starting with the top of the pile in that list of software, we have RAPD, which reads this file. Excuse me.
Could you make the font slightly larger on that
extent? I very much doubt it.
If you control right click, we'll give you a menu which lets you adjust
the font. Is that an extern?
So you would say, but this is not an extern.
What is it? Extern.
Control right click. Oh my god, it does. Better?
Huge is better.
Okay, those are for my two Sun machines. They have those MAC addresses, and if they come along, they get given those IP addresses, and then they go off to the TFTP server, and they boot from there. That's really simple. A Sun machine will not bother with DHCP or BP or any
very
other.
Very sensible.
I think it sucks. Because now you've got to remember why these two boxes won't boot when everything else will. Okay, this one you actually want to start down the bottom somewhere. Okay, any normal client would just get a DHCP address. It's really fallen off the end of the file, that's what it gets. Some arbitrary clone has a hardware address of X, Y, or Z. You give it a fixed address, you tell it where to go and get its host name, what file it's supposed to download to boot. I don't know, this is interesting. The PXE boot IA32.bin is a NetBSD bootloader which in turn will load a kernel. So we have another one of these dual stage things there. The kernel is obviously too big for TFTP, so they've written a little stub that just goes off and does that bit for you. You see, the Sun Ultra is a different. It doesn't have the fixed address bit. Well, it's got the fixed address bit, but it doesn't have the file names because it gets its address via a different method. The same for the other Sun. Alpha is the same as a PC. It just does its thing normally. Some of the older machines require a statement here. This is like option use RFC whatever. Which basically means use bootp, not DHCP. And then all the stuff that doesn't get accounted for in there just gets accounted for in here. So any machine that's not listed there would download this pxe-linux.bin, and that's basically what I've got running on the laptop. I'll show you how that works in a minute. PXE Linux is pretty cool stuff. It basically allows you to define little menus as much the same as what you would get on a CD or bootstiffy or whatever. You can define little help texts and you can make it do all sorts of stuff. It's got really simple syntax. And some of these things for some reason don't work on this laptop, but some do. If you just go with the default, starts a Debian installation, which for some reason breaks halfway through. Works at home, doesn't work here. I suspect that it's getting a different lease here or something. I was just going to hang there now. If you like. Tell you what, just shut this over down. Does this one have a VGA port? Right side. I use this quite a lot for like when I get arbitrary bits of hardware coming in which may be broken or the new machine for a client or whatever, to actually get the software installed on it. You can just run the Debian installer from there, or if you don't want to do that, you can boot a rooted Debian and just copy a tarball across, unpack it onto the drive, and off you go. Memtest.
The default was not the installer, it was Debian.
Yeah. If you type install, all it does is it fetches a different kernel and a different init ID, which is the Debian installer. Look familiar? Shall I run it? This is a PXE Linux, yeah. The other one that's pretty useful is Grub, which doesn't want to work here for some reason.
If your IBA doesn't PXE boot, can you boot Grub and tell it to make boot somewhere else?
Most distros or most installations that I've seen don't have the stage one network boot in the directory.
You can
push
PXE values on like a CD or a SIP or something.
I've got. We can try that.
So I can make it a Grub option.
Yeah.
I often use a Grub is not happy with his network card or something. You can put PXE Linux. You can make PXE Linux stiffies or CDs or whatever. But you kind of.
And you can. You don't put a PXE Linux image on it. What you'll do is you'll put an Etherboot image, which is an open source.
Can I try and boot off the stick?
In fact, often the onboard Intel PXE agent.
F12. Too late.
So you put your normal OS on there, which is not
installed. USB key.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is, as the machine boots up, you go for the, say it's got an Intel network, you run the Intel PXE, that's actually enough to change the
Etherboot. Wrong geometry or some such?
Yeah,
get it
by PXE, then that's a reasonable PXE implementation, so
you
use that to
load PXE.
Times and
times. No, it depends on.
Machine that has a hardware doesn't move from anything else.
You can put an Etherboot image on the hard drive as a garage. Or you can just write it to the
some reason why you need to network this thing.
other options.
Does this have multiple options for what form of USB device it's booting off?
It does have some different USB things in the BIOS.
Because no one's decided what the hell they actually want to do yet.
There's an other USB. Hold on, would enable or disable it.
No, that's not going to work.
USB CD-ROM, USB floppy, that's it. But it detects it as a key, so probably won't work for anything else.
USB key, that's another
key. Yeah, that one we haven't seen before. Yeah, I know. Every bloody system has got it different.
I think the USB keys emulate different things. Like if it's a floppy disk, presumably like loads of sector 1 and the partition starts immediately afterwards. Or for a hard disk, I think it skips the first cylinder or something stupid.
That's what you have free DOS on another USB stick for.
Yeah, but you can't boot a machine from a USB stick.
I keep trying, right there.
Sometimes it works. If you get everything right, and I mean, I was fiddling with this stuff last night. I had like three machines, and the one works, and the other one doesn't. And it's trying. It's trying really hard, but it's just not happening. Our PXE is really simple and it's fairly flexible. And this GPXE thing is, it's what used to be Etherboot. And they've got that ROM-O-Matic website, you can go and download whatever for your machine, and you can make things boot off really arbitrary devices, like these little Netgear hard drives in a box type thing, you can boot off that.
With GPXE you can boot Windows off iSCSI and weird shit like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's something Microsoft never dreamed possible.
Okay, I'm going to give up about here, and I reckon that's kind of it.
And you have some control on the server side of allowing certain Macs to boot. Yeah, yes. Do you want to see that? It looks for a certain configuration.
Yeah, sure. If we can get the projector going again. Yeah, there's lots of tricks you can do there. You can actually do things based on host name. You can do things based on the IP that you've given it. You can do it based on the hardware address, the vendor ID, all the OS ID, all kinds of stuff. Okay, that worked. / tf TP boot / PXE Linux .cfg. If you use SysLinux or any of those things, it should look very familiar. Prompt for one, say, by default display a file called boot message. If you press F1, display that file, etc., etc., etc. Label, kernel, append. I couldn't get this thing to load NetBSD i386. It point blank refuses to pass anything to this append basically doesn't work with an NetBSD kernel, which kind of sucks. So NetBSD, you've got to do the whole DHCP option. But those ones worked. At least at my home lab. Questions?
What is syntax for device names under that old tech greeting daemon, that homophony, does it still use that like weird?
If I remember correctly, everything is in caps, and it's just slash, 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 whatever. Hose, pipe. Buses are called hoses, and then like each sub thing on, like you'll have PCI, the first PCI bus will be hose, it's hose zero, and then after that you'll have device, whatever, and then just all in caps. This, of course, assumes that you have anything as modern as a PCI bus in such a machine. It's more likely to be turbo channel or some proprietary thing. EISA was also quite popular at one moment.
I really like Rob because it's like a complement of R. It's nice and simple and it's
Every machine should have Rob. It makes all this broadcast traffic on your network, it reduces it to like a quarter because everything just works. Well, that's not a totally unusual assumption on most networks. Unless you start ganging things or having multicast groups or weird stuff like that, it's not really a problem.
It's the simplest answer to like, how my MAC address is, what's my IP, and none of the other mess around.
I really wonder why they took it out of the kernel.
Beats me. I mean, the thing is, DHCP is actually reasonably complicated. There's so many options. You like, specify syslog servers in DHCP, and other stuff as options.
You can specify Windows servers.
Yeah, so options.
I deleted that line. I have that line in my DHCP config. The other program that's absolutely amazing for all this stuff is DNS Mask, because it actually does everything that all these other programs do. It's got an integrated TFTP server, it's got an integrated DHCP, it's got whatever you want. As long as you can figure out what the options are, it'll do it for you.
I haven't managed to get to serve SRV records.
No, I can definitely do that too.
I know it's
canned. Yeah.
Actually, no, I think they specifically say it doesn't work.
Pre-seeds?
For Debian.
Not on this machine.
So you can do a Debian install, plug in a machine and it just installs and sets up the right mirrors.
No, that is. Have you ever seen that Goodbye Microsoft page?
Yes.
That's truly amazing. If you haven't seen it, go out and look at it. It's great. Okay, I think we're done.